Blog Talk Radio. And welcome to another edition of Continue Mission. I am your host, James McCormick, and it's so, so good to be here tonight. It really is. That was Bill Protzman, and Protzman has been on our radio show before, and he's just a gifted pianist, you know what I mean? I enjoy listening to classical type music. I really do. I love symphonies. I love, you know, actual music, you know, where it takes skilled professionals to play it. It's really good for our minds too. It really is. So I'm real excited every time. And, you know, Bill gave us permission to use some of his songs. And this one, Anthem is the name of this song. It's one that I use often for opening up our show because, you know, it's really a calming and a soothing music, and I really hope that people are listening in tonight because we're going to talk about something very special, and it's the origins of Christmas from the Christian church perspective. Now, what do we truly know about the actual dates and seasons related to the celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ? You know, what do we really know about that? You know, there's so many people that will, you know, the Bible has this verse that it's, you know, we will strain a gnat, but we'll swallow a camel. You know, we get caught up in these really minute details, or conversations that really take away from the whole reason for the season. Now, some people may or may not agree with me, but if you're calling it Christmas, then it's because of the birth of Christ. It's a celebration of Christ's birth. Some people call it different things, and you know, that's perfectly fine. There's several seasons that and holidays that fall in and around the same time period. But ultimately, when we see Christmas, you know, it's about Christ, you know. And if you look at, you know, the first part of Christmas is Christ. And so we're going to have a really good discussion about that. And, of course, I just want to kind of go over the headlines of this week, this past week. Obviously, we saw the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. He was found not guilty by a jury of his peers, you know, in the same town that the act happened. Some people may or may not like it. It's the law of the land, you know. And your personal opinions are always that. They're your personal opinions. But, you know, you got an 18-year-old kid who, whether he should have been there or shouldn't have been there, obviously, when I was a parent, I'm just going to tell you all this right straight up Jump Street, I would have whipped my kid's hind end if they would have left my house with a rifle to go someplace at 17 years old like that, unless they was going, you know, to join the Army. I would have. But that's me, okay? That's not everybody. And you, as you can see, we have a wide array of different types of parenting that goes on out there, and obviously it shows, and it shows, you know, in the lack of respect that we see in this country. You know, and I'm not saying that kid falls in line with this, but understand, he was a kid. He was a kid. For the rest of his life, he's going to look over his shoulder, whether you're guilty or not guilty, folks. You know, you're going to look over your shoulder because there's always going to be somebody that's going to challenge you no matter what. And, you know, I think we should pray for that young man. I think we should. And I think that we should have some faith in the system, because right after that, a few days after that, we saw the conviction of three murderers in Brunswick, Georgia. Now, if you celebrate the Kyle Rittenhouse exoneration, but you condemn what happened in Georgia, you know, the conviction in Georgia, then you're probably a hypocrite, okay? And I say that for many reasons. Number one is both of them had a jury of their peers. Both of them were given overwhelmingly advantageous opportunities, so much so that one of the former prosecutors was arrested, you know, in the case where these three guys that, you know, shot this Ahmaud Arbery and killed him. He was unarmed. You know, three guys chasing you with the truck, they corner you, and you're like, hey, man, I don't owe you nothing. Why am I even here? Why are you wanting to keep me, or you're not the cops? And then the next thing you know, bam, bam, you know, and you're laying out there and you're dying in the street. You know, if you're upset because those three are going to jail, then you obviously can't be secure in knowing that the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict was good. If you question one, then you have to question both. That's just the way that it is. And I know that there are some people completely on the opposite spectrum that are saying, yes, they got convicted. Oh, but Kyle should have never got off. Same legal system, same judicial system. Now, there's things that occurred in both of these court hearings. There were opportunists that capitalized, made money on these two unfortunate incidents in which, you know, three people's lives were lost. Ahmaud Arbery and the two guys that were killed in Kenosha. The guy that was wounded in Kenosha, you know, whatever. Point is that you have a judicial system that's in place and it should work. Does it always work? No. Is there a level of discriminatory conduct? I think so. I think that there is an issue with it. You know, I do believe that. And I was very surprised, to be honest with you, to see all three get convicted. And they're going to jail for probably life. And life may or may not be that long for them because prison is not going to do them well. You know, maybe they'll get a chance to get in the gym, work out, get themselves in a better position before. I don't know. But I would say that it's going to be a bad situation. And the same thing for Kyle Rittenhouse. You know, all these politicians, they just need to keep their fangs out of him and their claws. And that goes for the ex-president, too. I'm just going to tell you, you cannot capitalize off of this and not hurt that boy. You're going to hurt him by doing that. You're going to put him in a position where everybody's going to see him. He's never going to be able to go anyplace and not be recognized. What do you think his chances are for a job in the future? The best thing, if people really want to help him, they'll help him to get to college, finish his college degree, pray for him, and shut their mouth about it and stop parading him around like it's some kind of a great victory because you're just aggravating things. I mean, are we going to like it when BLM starts parading the pictures of these three white guys that are going to prison and starts talking about what's most likely going to be going on in prison with them? Come on, it's no secret what happens in prison. And it's not a story. It really happens. I worked in a prison, folks. I can tell you, my son worked in a prison, okay? And we can all tell you that that kind of thing happens. As much as you try to keep it from happening, there's a lot of rapes going on, okay? Male-on-male raping. And it happens. Do I wish that this had happened to these guys? No, I do not. But it's just the way that it is. And so some people are, you know, happy about, you know, the parading of the victories. There's, you know, a victory on this side and a victory on that side. They're both losses, folks. And ultimately, you'll remember nothing about it within a year. And sadly, lives were lost. Were they lives that, you know, were good people? I don't know. You know, everybody likes to pull up the rap sheets of everyone that's been killed and tries to justify the killing. For some, not all. And when you do that, I want each and every one of you to go look in the mirror and say, have you ever got a speeding ticket? Have you ever been arrested? Have you ever done something that you did not get caught doing, but boy, if you had, you would have had the same record that some of these other people had. So that is the news of the week. Obviously, we've got an issue with China. It continues to brew. We need to be on our A game. COVID is still out there, folks. People are still dying of COVID. I mean, look, I'm not saying to go around and be afraid of COVID. But what I am saying is use common sense. You know, you had the Black Friday thing, and we're going to go into some of that when we talk about the origins of Christmas as well. You know, Black Friday today, you know, I decided to take my son and his friend to a movie theater. You know how long it's been since we've been to a movie theater? The only three people in there wearing a mask, you know, and the place was packed. Lots of coughing going on in there. And you know, few people wearing a mask. Few people even having the common courtesy to cover their face when they cough. You know, this is what I'm talking about, parents not raising your kids right. But sadly, a lot of those people were over the age of 55. And they definitely should have known better. You know, I was taught to cover my mouth when I coughed way before COVID. You want to know why? Because I wasn't raised like a pig. Okay? I was raised like a human being and not a pig. Pigs do that. Animals do that. Not human beings. You should know better. But they do it anyway. And they do it not caring. Not caring if the person that's sitting next to you may have a very seriously ill mother. Someone being treated for cancer. Someone that has to take regular dosages of prednisone so they can breathe, which brings down their immunity system. But you don't care. You just cough. You don't give a crap. All that stuff right in people's faces. COVID's a hoax. Well, okay. If you think COVID's a hoax, the flu's definitely not a hoax. The cold's not a hoax. And all these things really do kill people that are being what? Being treated for cancer. And if you go out and do something like that, then shame on you. And you may never know it until you go before the Lord. And you may not believe in God. That's fine. That's fine as well. But you'll sure believe in him when you're standing before him. And I promise you, one day all of us will stand before him, no matter what your beliefs are. That's the truth. The devil will take you. It doesn't matter. You know, and I'm telling you, you can see, we put this under Christianity today. So, you know, just to let you know, we're going to be talking about things like Christmas, Jesus Christ, the church, you know, the history of the church, and things that Christians should be talking about. You know, speaking of that, covering your mouth when you cough, I remember going to church. And I remember people telling us, you know, there were men in the church, okay, that sit on the front pew. And they watched for guys, little boys like me, to get back there cutting up. And we'd get in church sometimes, hee, 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 ha, ha, laughing around, right? And those men of the church would come back, and they would let us know real quickly, move up to the front. We'd have to move up to the front, and we'd sit there. And they'd say, now, boys, I don't want you cutting up or acting up here because we're going to tell your dad. And your dad usually whipped you. You know what I mean? And I'm not advocating the beating of anybody. You know, so you got to be careful what you say. But I do believe that there needs to be more discipline in this world. I don't know what's going on. And you adults that are doing this, shame on you. I don't know where you're coming from this. We went to a hotel, and we were in there trying to get breakfast, and you know, there was a whole teenage basketball team, okay? They were all in there, had a mask on when they went up to get their breakfast, gloves on. You know who didn't? The 55 and older crowd, my people, 50 and older, my crowd, okay? They weren't respectful. They were cutting in line. You would think the teenagers would do that, but they don't. They didn't. Because they had two coaches that were there watching them every step of the way. And I thank God for that basketball team up in Charlestown, West Virginia. Wherever you are, I hope you're listening. You know, awesome mannerism. And they stayed in the hotel. They weren't partying all night long. You know, it's not everybody. It's just a few, a select few. And we need to clean up our act. So it comes with mutual respect. So that's some of the news that's going on today. You know, we have a new variant of COVID that's coming out. Whether you like it or not, this thing's mutating. You know, I've been vaccinated. I believe in the vaccination. Some people don't. It's up to you. You know, but I went out and I got vaccinated. I did. Some people say, well, I wouldn't do that. You know, I stood in the line, in many lines when I was in the Army, and I got shots for everything, everything. You didn't get the shot? Guess what? You refused it, you'd become non-deployable, and you'd get in trouble, and you'd probably get kicked out. So why is it a surprise that the same thing's happening now with COVID vaccines? And why is it such a, oh my gosh, shock? I didn't hear all that when we were getting the anthrax vaccinations and taking the nerve gas pills during Desert Storm. So let's, you know, let's get realistic here, folks. We cannot just go out and politicize something just because, you know, you got idiots out there that call themselves scientists, but really they've never even opened up a science book in their life. And they don't know the difference between human anatomy, gross anatomy, science, or anything else. You know, it's been approved by the FDA. The Pfizer and Moderna has been approved by the FDA. I took the Pfizer. Okay? So I don't know what else you need for it. I'll tell you what was really experimental was that anthrax shot and those nerve gas pills. How about that? You know, but we had to take them. And you want to talk about something was rushed? Try them nerve gas pills. Try that anthrax shot. Those were given to us at night for the most part. And we were told it was just an update on your vaccines. That was it. But we stood in line and we did it. And you know, this is the kind of thing, you know, the USDA, you know, or the FDA, don't know if they approved it or not. We were not allowed to ask that question. We were told to suck it up and drive on. And obviously there's some serious issues from some of that, you know, but here you've got a vaccine that's out there right now that has been approved by the FDA. Whether you believe in it or not, it's been approved. It's been approved. It's been approved. Millions and millions of people have got the vaccination. But some people don't want to get it. And that's look, that's your thing. But I suggest that you still wear a mask and you still learn what your mommy and daddy should have told you. And if they didn't teach you, then please turn this up really, really loud so you can hear it. Cover your mouth when you cough. Wash your hands, your nasty little hands, okay? Be respectful of people. It's none of your business why this person's wearing a mask or why they choose not to wear a mask. None of your business. I don't walk up and say, hey, why are you not wearing a mask? I don't. But if you cough in my direction, okay, at that point then I'm going to tell you, why don't you learn how to cover your mouth and be a civilized human being? And believe me, I don't have a problem saying that. I've said it to people before, and I'll say it to people again. It's just because there's a level of civility. All right. So anyways, we got a great show tonight. We do. We got a really great show tonight. And you know, and I know that Father Mike and Rich are going to, you know, have some discussion on this. Understand that the whole purpose of this show is to get the Christian perspective on Christmas. Because, honestly, you can turn on the television and you can hear the, you know, the contemporary, you know, reason for Christmas, Black Friday sales. What I want to hear, and listen, I've heard it, so it's not like it's not been taught to me. But what I want my listeners, our listeners, to hear is the real Christian, theologian, historical perspective. And yes, there is going to be rebuttal, you know, obviously, you know, people are going to push back, and that's okay. But it's like covering your mouth when you cough. We will be respectful on here, and we will cover our mouth when we cough, okay? And we won't be rude to each other. So, yeah. Just aggravated. You know, you go to a movie theater, you know, wear your mask, you know, whatever. If you don't want to wear a mask, that's fine. But at least don't cough in my direction and have enough common sense to bury your face down in your shirt or your elbow or whatever when you sneeze, blow your nose and everything else. You know, I mean, seriously, that's ridiculous. And we wonder why plagues and sicknesses just keep going and going. It's because of people being unsanitary and unclean. That hurts some feelings, don't it? I hope it does. I hope it hurts enough that you'll start covering your mouth and you'll start washing your nasty hands. Stop picking your nose and then trying to shake hands with people, too. I've seen a lot of that in my day. That's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. If you're going to pick your nose, go in the bathroom, pick your nose, but wash your hands, okay? Cleanliness is next to godliness, folks. You know, if you're a nasty, filthy person, it's hard for you to sit in church and say that you love the Lord when you don't have enough respect for that person next to you that you don't want, that you've got a cough in their face. Because if you do that, then, you know, I don't say, how's that loving your neighbor? That's not really loving your neighbor, is it? So, all right, let's go, folks. Hey, we're gonna have a good show tonight. You know, I got to get on that little, I got to get on my soapbox there for a minute. Ain't that right, Rich?
Yeah.
I get aggravated by that stuff, man. I've always been aggravated by that. You know, when I was in the Army, you know, if I ever had a fist fight with people, it was generally because of nastiness, you know, just people doing nasty stuff. I just couldn't stand it. So anyways, wash your hands. Isn't that right, Father?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Get that hand sanitizer going.
And do not pick your nose.
I don't want picking their nose and shaking my hand either.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, we got a good show tonight. How are we going to start it off, guys?
Well, I think the agreement, the rules of the contest is Patel is going to he's got the closing remark, so I get the opening remarks, okay? Because, the topic of the discussion is, and it's an old one that we've heard over and over again, is putting Christ back into Christmas, okay? Now, for our regular listeners, you know, you're used to Father Pacella. I mean, we're more than friends. He's my spiritual teacher and stuff like that, okay? And I like to play the devil's advocate in order not only to present the other side of the argument, but also to get him to explain things to the lay populace. Because keep in mind, I think I saw a survey that said it was something like maybe one, it's a little over a 30% of Americans even go to church. And there's probably a little bit more that even believe in God. But I will tell you, this new generation, you know, the young generation, they think they're in control of everything. The older generation, when you get to my age, you've realized you're not in control of anything, okay, especially if you've gone to combat. And you begin to believe in a higher being. All right. But on this subject, I am actually, what I'm going to argue is my beliefs. And now the thing is, for the audience, you have missed the debate we had before, the text messages going back and forth until we finally narrowed it down to like, okay, what we're going to talk about, because this is kind of a heated subject. All right, I am going to take the secular view. I'm going to describe the secular history of Christmas. And, of course, Father Michael Pacella is going to describe the theological really means. Okay. And we're going to cover it in two topics. The first one is the dating of Christmas. All right. Whether it's really a pagan holiday or not. And the second one are the traditions of Christmas, of how we practice it today. And kind of in like how we've gotten to where we're at today and why Christ has been removed from Christmas and why we need to put him back in. Okay. So to start off with, it is my belief that no one remembered the person that came up that settled on the birthday of Christ, which was the December the 25th, is Hippocrates. Okay, if I haven't mispronounced his name, Hippocrates. And
Hippolytus.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Okay. So the Y is like a long I. Hippolytus. Okay. So he lived in the 3rd century, and his calculation was based on the beginning of the earth. That's the interesting thing, because the debate out there. In this debate with Michael and stuff, I'm going to have to admit that when the Catholic Church selected December the 25th as the birthday of Christ, they were not deliberately doing that to Christianize several existing pagan holidays. What I'll point out is the proximity of it may have had an effect on it, because Hippolytus, what he did was he had calculated based on Genesis when was the exact day that the earth was created, the genealogy and all that. He came up with March the 25th, and so it was his belief that Jesus came to life in the womb, conceived on March the 25th. And so if you do exactly...
Excuse me, Rich, can I just
go ahead.
One. The church teaches that's when Mary conceived March 25th, 9 months
right.
later, because remember, the apostle... the companion of the Apostle Paul, St. Luke, interviewed Mary for the infancy narratives. He was a historian.
Well, I was going to bring up, I'd say John, but I'm going to get to that. So, but you're right. That it's not based on, it's based on when they believed that Mary conceived. And
right.
I believe it was the anniversary of the creation of the earth, which was March the 25th. And 9 months later, would have
right.
been December the 25th.
Right.
Okay. Now, you mentioned okay, in the writings of the Gospels, of the four Gospels,
right.
you know, you're talking about Luke, who is, because I am coming at this from a historical perspective,
mm-hmm.
and Luke was a historian. He was a church historian. He went out and interviewed. He was a follower of Paul, but he interviewed
mm-hmm.
Peter, and he interviewed Mary. He interviewed everybody. He was a surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
He was educated.
Right.
Okay, giving
Amen.
That. But here's the thing. I presented this to you. I'm going, look, seriously. Look, men don't remember birthdays. We get in trouble even with our wives trying to remember their birthdays, okay? You want to know who remembers birthdays? Moms. Moms mm-hmm. remember birthdays, okay? And if there was one person who would never forget when Jesus was born, it was Mary, okay? The one person who was probably the closest to Mary was the beloved apostle John.
Right.
Because
that's right.
Jesus on the cross told John. John was one, the only apostle who was there at the crucifixion.
Mm-hmm.
And he told him, take care of my mother. And so John was there. And I will bet you, just knowing human nature, that on the anniversary of Jesus' birthday, Mary talked about it. So if there was one man who remembered Jesus' birthday, it would have been the Apostle John.
Mm-hmm.
But John died when? Year 1000 AD?
She lived with him all her life.
That's
okay,
right.
And then he died about the year 100.
Right, that's right. So that's my point. So if there's one guy that remembered it. So as an historian, we look for, you know, like dates. And and I will tell you right now, because doing interviews, okay, just to point out, part of the debate you and I had is I talk about the process of a historian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
So I spent a lot of time interviewing veterans during the war
right.
and after the war. I caught them. I interviewed them. I went over there and interviewed them, and I caught them after they come back. And the most common comment I had when I interviewed them after they returned, and we're not even talking a year, the most common comment is, I can't believe I don't remember that date. The first thing everybody forgets is dates. The first thing. Mary would have never forgot the date. John, cause of repetition, just as you said, John, because Jesus had commanded him to take care of Mary, he was with Mary all the way up until her death, and he would have every the anniversary of Jesus' birthday, she would have probably talked about it. He would have not forgot.
How about the shepherds that had that great heavenly host revealed to them and the magi from the
okay,
east?
You know what? I'll give you that. I'm going to give you that. But all those guys would have passed away during that first century or a little bit
into the
second century.
But the apostles' memoirs were already written.
Okay, and that is where I come. I challenge you. I said, show me a document before Hypothalamus that has Jesus' birth.
Easily.
As far as I know, it doesn't exist. Because Hypothalamus calculated that birth based on what he believed was the date of creation. So, and so when we say, you know, information can be passed down by two means. Orally, there can be that oral tradition. But as I'm pointing out from my experience as a historian, the first thing everybody forgets are dates.
But
the other way is written. Go ahead.
Right. But the sacred tradition, when you have the heaven that tell you about the birth of the Savior, and then you have those who saw the star and traveled to it, that's not something easily forgotten. I've never forgotten my wife's birthday.
I got you. I am going to agree with you on that.
And like I said,
for
the
those people,
Luke, when he did the infancy narrative, not only did he interview Mary, but he also did a portrait of her because he was artistic in that way as well,
right.
like yourself. And this is, like I said, we even know Mary's birthday. We can talk about Alexander the Great. We can talk about Hanukkah, 165 BC.
Well,
why is it so
there's a difference with king. because the realm, from what I understand, the realm of a, you know, time was measured by the birth of the king, the realm of the king, okay? But, see, I'm going to agree with you on everything you just described. The point is that most of those eyewitnesses who would never forget the date passed away part of the second century, but it was the third century that Hypotagus came up with the date of Jesus's birth. So you
but I told you over
100 years for people to forget this, unless someone wrote it down.
The church has never made a declaration by one person. Even Jerome had some questions about those inscripturated canonical books. Every decision that's made is officially made by several hundred bishops waiting on the Holy Spirit. The church never goes with one person, no matter how brilliant they are, to make a decision on something like that. But I'm
I would agree with you after Constantine. But before Constantine, I don't think there was a whole lot of collectivism in these councils because
you're incorrect.
Most of them were Christianity was persecuted.
But the first council, the Council of Jerusalem, where James was bishop, the Apostle Paul and the Apostle Peter were there. It's recorded in Acts 15.
Right.
It's Jerusalem A.D. 49. That's the first council. And that was the precedent for synods and councils from that very first one.
Got it. But the persecution began after that. Jerusalem.
Oh, even before that.
Yeah.
Even
so
before that.
My point is, I'm not trying to win this argument. I'm presenting my side and you're presenting your side.
Right.
So it is all right. So I'm going to leave because we'll move on from this. So what I'm my point is that from the time of John, the eyewitnesses, those who actually knew the date, over 100 years transpired before Hypotagus come up with or the church agreed on the date. Unless, and my position is, unless it had been written down or they had already recognized the date and they, because the church, the Catholic Church is big into, they borrow it from the Jews, is, so unless
they
were already celebrating that.
That's right, and they did it from the beginning. They
right.
did it.
So
they,
so unless there's no record of that. So I'll give you that.
Yeah, and liturgy,
so if,
let me just explain, Rich.
Go ahead.
Our records are in liturgy. We believe the way we pray. We have early liturgies of Mark, of James. And so the story of Christ has been recorded, as you said, by sacred tradition or what the pagans call oral tradition. And also by liturgical masses that were written out in feast days that were celebrated. We have a liturgical calendar, as I mentioned to you. Sunday starts our new year, just like when the Jews celebrate Hanukkah. We don't go by the calendar year or the secular calendar. So there's always been, like you mentioned in Judaism, always been, whether it was Esther, Purim, whether it was the great time when the Red Sea was opened, or whatever it might be, whatever it is, the Jews always commemorate Hanukkah, 165 BC, and it's on the liturgical calendar, and we celebrate these feasts as historical facts.
Right. Okay. So I'm coming at it from the historical perspective, which is record, and the first documented date is by Hippolyticus
to Pope Benedict, who has two PhDs, and Taylor Marshall, who has a PhD.
All right.
Pope
what
Benedict has
leave?
Written
Lydia.
Four volumes. Pope Benedict has written four volumes on the infancy narratives, and they both say that December 25th is the correct date.
All right.
And they know the language.
Look,
you're
the one who asked me to cite my sources. And what I'm pointing out is, as a historian, we look at the first recorded date. And the dates I'm going to propose comes from Hippolyticus, which was in the 3rd century. And the second one is based on, it was when Sextus Africanus wrote the calendar. He put it in there, and that was 336 A.D. So that, from recorded history, those are the only two dates we have. So
did he
the
put
bishop,
it in there?
You know, the people you have cited,
it?
Unless they have other sources, these are the only two historical sources we have for the date.
The calendar had been going on for years. Just like I mentioned to you in our conversation about the Julian calendar and also about the Gregorian calendar and how we date Easter even today. These things were codified, but it doesn't mean they weren't celebrated. From the earliest
days. And I'm going to give you credit for that. See, because I will leave it open. Just because it's not recorded doesn't just because someone didn't write it down doesn't mean it wasn't remembered or practiced. Because I've used that argument on Indian fighting doctrine, okay, or counterinsurgency doctrine. Just the army never wrote a manual on how to fight guerrillas in Vietnam. But guess what? Everybody understood what cordon and search meant. Okay, or hammer and anvil, because it was understood and practiced. I will give you that, okay? But as a secular historian, I'm going to say we only have, you know, December 25th recorded twice, okay, in the 3rd century and then in the 4th century, okay? So with that, we move on.
Can I just say one thing before you go? Because
yeah,
I mean,
go
that's
ahead.
Not the most
yeah,
important
ahead.
Thing that he was born. But, you know, when I studied, even at Harvard and other places, my theology at Yale, there are people that deny that he was even a person and that he was even historically recorded. And we know other different annals of history that we can look at around the time it was recorded that show that he lived that way. So
really,
it's more important that we substantiate the historicity, and I believe, you know, that the date is correct, but I think more importantly, because the real deniers, like the deniers of the Holocaust and deniers of other things, are that he even was a historical figure. And we have even other documentation outside of the New
Testament.
Well,
there's three. There's actually three. Three outside sources, and you and I discussed this. All right, I'm glad you brought this up because we need to preempt this discussion that the three of us are believers. The three of us believe that Jesus Christ is the living Son of God. Okay.
Yes.
We need no convincing. What you and I are arguing over is whether he was born on December 25th or not. Okay, it's kind of like what as you educated me on the rift between the Western Church and the Eastern Church is when did Jesus become God? Was it in the womb or was it at conception? Okay, that for us, you and me, I mean, for everybody listening, we're arguing over like a date when they don't, they're not even convinced that Jesus existed or he was God. Okay.
Right.
We got that. We're arguing a date. We're it's like the different, you know, thing we're going to argue is for everybody else is so inconsequential, but to us it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. And what I pointed out to you was, the annals of Tacitus. Because they give the best description, and they point out that Jesus was crucified under Pontius Pilate. All right?
That's right.
Yes, there are three secular sources, Roman historians that wrote that a man named Jesus existed, and you've got this whole movement that grows around it. That's like saying Muhammad didn't exist.
Right.
Because
but Joseph,
because
Josephus,
really, it's a century after he lived that there's a reference to him. If you look, if you use that example and say, well, there's no contemporary references to Muhammad, therefore he didn't exist. They made him up afterwards. You have this whole religion that grows out of this one man. Of course he had to exist. You don't,
well,
you
like
know, Josephus, you may get the name wrong or
Pliny
something like that.
Also
go ahead.
Have historical, Josephus and Pliny also have historical records.
Well, I'm not going to use Josephus because
in
my research on Josephus.
Well, Pliny was given a report to the government. Tacitus. Pliny was given a report to the government in the same way.
Okay, yeah.
Because
when
they were
we
concerned.
Come to the Roman historians, I'm going to be in agreement because I've heard criticism of the fact that if you look at the way Josephus wrote, who is a Jewish historian, that
but
when he mentions Jesus, it does not fit with his writing. And there's a lot of speculation that that was added later. And that was not written.
I've heard that.
So that's why
but
I'm not using Josephus. There's a lot of people who will cite
anything.
Go ahead.
I'm saying I went to schools that doubted everything. They didn't believe anything. And I think that there has to be some level of credibility because everybody, in my experience, that wants to write a paper, that wants to, you know, challenge a position. You know, one thing I said to you in our dialogue today was the church has been sinful, but the church is not stupid. The church is the one who started all the major universities in the world. And so there's always been a philosophical tradition and a deeply historical. You know, we have great historians like Eusebius or Bede. We have a lot of wonderful, you know, records that have been kept, as you stated, even birth records, marriage records, things of that nature as well. And so I think we have to understand, like from Judaism, that these holy days, these events have been recorded and have been acknowledged on a yearly basis. And we're talking about the Feast of the Nativity, I mean, which is a major thing. And I shared with you also that not only did the church acknowledge that, but they acknowledge when Mary's conceived, her birthday, her mother's life. And so there's a lot of history that's not canonical. The Evangelium of James, for instance, there's a lot of, I know historical theologians that look to these documents as authentic, although they're not canonical, especially those that I met at Oxford and Cambridge and also from Durham. And so, you know, this is just not conjecture. You know, these are people that have tried to establish the historicity of Christ. And like you said, the date, you know, we could talk about that. I don't think that's as important, even though I believe it's the 25th of December, as the fact that he was born, that he was God, that he died for our sins, and that he rose again.
Yeah, see, look, for the listeners out there, the thing where Father Michael and I will go round and round on is the date, okay? The rest of it is we're pretty much in agreement in. And what I was going to say is, as a historian, unless the date was written down, you're guessing. And as a historian, when I'm sitting there interviewing guys from Iraq and are describing an event that took place and they can't remember the date, or even Vietnam, I have to ask them, a significant event where multiple people remember it. How I narrow it down is to, I'll give you the example from Iraq, is when the pipeline exploded and melted a section of the road of Tampa near, what is it, James, what's the name of that town you guys had to drive through, Samarwa or Samara?
Saffron.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
and that was near
to,
the...
You had to do this detour because Tampa had melted. That's a significant event.
ASR circle.
Tampa had melted, and everybody had to create a detour around that. My point is, I don't have
the
exact date of that.
No?
And but what I've done is
but
I
December 7th, let me just say, December 7th and 9/11 are ingrained in our minds.
Correct.
When you think about such a historical event that changed the world, I mentioned to you B.C., A.D., it altered history until the redactionists of late, you know, call it the, you know, the common era rather than before Christ and the year of the Lord. So, I mean, we're not talking about a small event that wasn't known, even in
got
that,
it,
that
got
part
it,
of the
got
world.
It. But here's the thing. You're absolutely right in the generation of the people who experienced that. But let's move ahead 100 years later. Unless that date was written down or they were practicing a feast of that date, it was not remembered. That's my point. Which means,
and I say
someone
that
they may have actually been celebrating that feast, but we have no record of that.
We do.
That's my point
liturgy.
Right there.
We do in the liturgies. I said the liturgy of Mark and James are even before the end of the first century. Okay, and the church.
No, they
had
wrote.
A
they wrote that, but they didn't write a date down. None of the apostles.
I'm talking
none
about
the authors of the four
rhythm.
Gospels wrote a date down.
No, I'm talking about the rhythm of the liturgy for the services of the church, even. Some dates that were prior to some of the Gospels being finished, okay, before Peter and Paul were martyred in the 60s.
Right.
There's certainly so for that great event, which was in the conscience and in the mind of the church, was commemorated at every Mass. And the different feast days, like I shared with you, someone asked me, some time ago, we know when Mary was born and we know when Jesus was conceived. These are all things that the church has preserved. And that's why when we talk about Hanukkah pretty soon.
Yeah, right now we're going around.
Years
and,
before.
Right. Yeah. Let's move
the
on.
The church has kept good records.
I think we're repeating ourselves.
Rich.
Okay.
No, agreed. But I'm saying the church has kept good records. Of its history.
I don't think they had good records. You see, you say a record. If they wrote down
the
date, they have a record of it. They
have
a tradition. They don't have a record. Until Hippolytus and Africanus' calendar of 336, those are the only two times we have the date.
There is
no record that exists before that.
You can't tell me the church wasn't celebrating the nativity of the Lord until 336 when he codified it.
Well, the theory on that one is that the church was, look, the Caesars celebrated their birthdays, their reign. Christians celebrated the death and crucifixion and resurrection of Christ. That was the most important date. The most important ritual among Christians is communion, is the Eucharist.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
There was nothing in the Bible about celebrate. In fact, well, really, we could go on, but I really want to give you your 30 minutes to the end, and we got 30 minutes between now and then. I want to cover, traditions and rituals. Okay.
You mentioned about the kings. Remember, Constantine becomes emperor in 313, and the Edict of Milan, which was toleration, where they had to give all the Christians their property, which they had confiscated, and then he builds the new Rome in Constantinople. And so you got to know that they weren't some little group in a hole. At that point.
No. I got you. What finally they're not. I'm still studying that, and I've been reading. I have the Ecclesiastes of the Christian Church and read through it and trying to get a feel. I've always been fascinated with what was mm-hmm. like in those first three centuries. Because, right. you know, on one hand, you hear they're all hiding. They're only worshiping in the catacombs. Everything's secretive. If they expose themselves, they're subject to, you know, martyrdom. But yet you have bishops in these major cities. Okay, so
right.
it's kind of like there's times where it's okay to come out of the closet and worship. You have this hierarchical structure, okay? See, I mean, on one hand, you look at it, if everybody is hunting down the Christians to throw them in the Colosseum to be eaten by lions or cover them with tar to be torches to light your way at night, this is a guerrilla movement, okay, which is an underground movement. But there's enough evidence to show, no, there was one entire, if I'm not mistaken, I can't remember the name of that martyr, but he was a Roman legionnaire who, the entire legion was Christian. They refused to celebrate one holiday, so they were executed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was, so Christianity was a lot more popular, a lot more open. You know, it's kind of like casting a blind eye to the, to it, then it, well, anyway, it's really difficult to try to understand that the first three centuries of Christianity. But I want to move on. I want to move on from that because here's the
let
thing.
Me just give
right.
a commendation to the historian at Yale. He's got six volumes. Kin is his last name, Pelkin, and just phenomenal theologian as well as, and like I said, he was a historian at Yale, and he has six volumes starting from the very beginning. I remember lending you one. He's not only an astute historian, but an astute theologian as well. He's the best I've ever read.
I got you. Okay. But unless you have a document I don't have, you're guessing.
But I think your conjecture, because you found that one, as if it's the only one
two.
That exists.
I found two, and I haven't
still,
seen any other.
Yeah.
And as uh-huh. I'm stating, unless all these scholars have a primary source that I have not found, then, you know, they're guessing. That's
there's,
what history is.
There's three
is.
Or four
I gotta admit
books.
It. That's
right.
what history is. We got limited sources, primary sources, and we're guessing.
Right. Yeah,
but
well,
I'm leaving it open.
Mm-hmm.
This is
yeah.
why I want to
the
move on. I'm leaving it open.
The feast of
the Nativity could have been practiced mm-hmm. and people remembered it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's
I'm
only
saying,
two
Pope Benedict's work
records
on the infancy narratives, and Keller Marshall's research is compelling and it needs to be looked at on your part, because it's not just conjecture. And again, like I said, there's so many things like the Jews celebrating Hanukkah, which was
Got
165
Got
BC.
It.
So why do they remember that date and those 8 days that they celebrate, and we can't remember
because
when?
Because we have no record.
Born.
Because we have no record of anyone celebrating the Nativity before
no,
Hypolysis.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree. The church has always had a rhythm.
You may be right.
The church has always had a rhythm.
But as far as I know,
it's an extension of Judaism. Mm-hmm.
You may be right, but as far mm-hmm. as I know, from a historical perspective, there is
mm-hmm.
no previous
mm-hmm.
mention of the date December 25th to the birth of Jesus Christ. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to move on to point out, okay, so let's go from Saturnalia to
right.
where we are, how we get today. All right. So this is the thing I'm going to give. All right. You brought up in our earlier discussion that every year when Christmas comes up, everybody's wanting to say it's celebrating a pagan holiday, Saturnalia. And everybody likes to say Saturnalia, which was actually December 17th. The thing is, among pagans, winter solstice, which is December 21st, is a significant day. Okay. Well, Saturnalia, the birth of the god Saturn, was supposedly the 17th of December. But actually, the date closer to Christmas, the birth of Christ, was Sol Invictus, the birth of the sun, and Mithra. And
right.
I came across the study of Mithra, that ritual, because I was big fan of Roman history, and I went around visiting all these Roman ruins, and I found the most popular religion among Roman officers, centurions, was Mithra. There's a lot of parallels between Mithra and Christ. It's about sacrifice and stuff like that. Well, the thing is, I remember one of the tours of they had, you know, outside, it was outside this Roman fort, a small Roman fort. They had this chamber, 100 men, a century, and they worshipped Mithra, and it was fairly well preserved. And I remember the guy telling us that Mithra was actually challenging. It was so popular, it was challenging Christianity. I thought that was interesting, and that's why I began to study it. The point is, so we actually have two calendar dates of pagan birthdays that are also on the 25th. Now, we're past arguing whether Christ was born on.
Why are they authentic in the calculation?
No, it doesn't matter. I want to get past that.
Okay.
The point is, you're probably right in those stuff too. They're making up, but the thing is, they're celebrating.
Right?
My point is, I'm going to say,
but they're mythological.
So you have three religions that have agreed on the birthday of their spiritual leader on the same day, okay? And they are competing in popularity. So what I found is, if you go around Europe, every culture celebrated winter solstice. It's a important holiday for them. So the first part of the debate was born on the December 25th. You and I can't come to an agreement on that. So we'll accept that difference, and we'll say, so my other point is that because the Catholic Church has accepted December the 25th as the birthday of Christ, it is now competing with all these other pagan religions.
Exercised all the time? I mean, they must have lost out because they're all mythological, and we're still celebrating
Christmas
around the world.
Actually, you're right. No, there we're in agreement. There we're in agreement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for the listening, well, most of the listening audience probably doesn't know the argument, but one of the arguments is that what the Catholic Church did was when they found a filler religion or a holiday, instead of trying a pagan holiday, instead of trying to do away with it, what they would do instead is take that holiday and incorporate it into their tradition. So the common
what we call it, and what the Pope said to St. Augustine, was baptize. You see, missionaries can't destroy cultures. So you find what in their culture that's not offensive to God or syncretism,
correct,
and you can utilize some of those things, and we call it baptizing their culture, just like the early church fathers baptized Plato, baptized Aristotle, but anything in Aristotle that was against the faith, Thomas Aquinas rejected. So it's not compromised.
Okay.
It's baptism.
Got it. So I would say in the argument that you just presented, So if we're going, that's the, see, when most of the people say that Christmas is actually celebrating Saturnalia, in reality, it's no, Saturnalia was began December 17th, mm-hmm. but it was the birthday, it was two other dates. It was Sol Invictus, and it was the birthday of Mithra that took place, that are believed to take place on December 25th, but very few people bring it up. If you're going to say, well, the Romans believed that Saturn was the ultimate god, and the Christians come along and say, no, he's not. God is God, and Christ is his son. So you're celebrating, you're really celebrating the birthday of the Son of God. So we're going to take Saturnalia and make it Christmas, Christ's Mass.
Well, most okay. of Rome now is all Christian, and that's where the right. Vatican is. And so I've evidently, you know, during the history of the competition, they no longer in their pagan practices, you know, held the minds and hearts of the people.
No, correct. Yeah, that is another debate. Now, here's the thing I'm going to point out, and I mentioned this in some of our discussion before. What we just discussed is really irrelevant because over a thousand years passes before we get to the beginning of the recorded practice of Christmas as we know it today. And you think about it, is so for all those people who say, well, you know, Christmas is celebrating Saturnalia, I'm like, you know what? I think after 1,000 years, the Catholic Church could have purged any resemblance of Saturnalia, okay?
But because Christmas was always practiced by the Feast of the Nativity, the Christ
yeah.
Mass. What's going
I'm
on
not
today,
argue
Rich?
That.
That's not Christmas. That's
I'm not
going to
argue.
That's
yeah, I'm not
going to
argue that. I've
yes.
presented the argument that
yes.
that it might not be actually the date of
uh-huh.
Jesus' birth, but how it was, what it was celebrated as, I'm not going to argue
mm-hmm.
that. So,
mm-hmm.
so we have, so for whatever reason, the Catholic Church has accepted December 25th as the birthday of Jesus Christ. Whether it is or it
mm-hmm.
isn't, that's what they have accepted. And they have practiced that ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
whatever pagan religions existed that also celebrated the winter solstice and
mm-hmm.
The birthday of Mithra or Sol Invictus, after
right.
1,000 years, I think that's been purged. So
right.
now we get to England, Christmas
mm-hmm.
in England, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, we talked about
the
that.
Christmas has been passed down to us, I believe, comes from the Christmas traditions come from three cultures, Germany. They handed us the Christmas tree. English, most of what we practice comes from the English. And then there is the Irish Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
There's where we have some really clear pagan traditions. Holly, mistletoe, the Yule log. I don't think anybody ever celebrates the Yule log, but when you get into early America history, there was the Yule log, and Yule tides.
Mm-hmm.
You'll hear that. That all comes from the Celtic pagan ritual or tradition.
Mm-hmm.
That was
mm-hmm.
added to it. The point is, now, the thing in my reading. Okay, let me back up. Okay, what as a historian? What recorded history do we have of Christmas? Well, Shakespeare wrote about Christmas. He mentioned Christmas three times. Now, it wasn't until the early 19th century, we're talking like 1820s, that we have three writers.
30s and 40s,
Washington Irving is an American writer, Charles mm-hmm. Dickens, and
right.
Clement Moore is a poet. Clement Moore wrote, A Visit from St. Nicholas, which, it's that famous poem, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," okay? He was inspired, this St. Nicholas story, Santa Claus flying in with reindeer on, okay, he was inspired by a short story by Washington Irving, okay, again in the 1820s. Okay, so you've got these three writers, and as I was reading up on them, we're all very familiar with, we should be familiar with A Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. You have reference to the Christmas tree, you have reference to the feast, you have reference to the exchanging of gifts, okay? It isn't until you have the story of Washington Irving wrote about Santa Claus and the same thing with Moore, that now you have this figure who delivers the gifts. It's not people exchanging gifts like in
but
Charles Dickens.
But that gift-giving
movie.
Went back to St. Nicholas.
Go ahead.
That gift-giving and the whole Father Christmas and the whole sense of St. Nicholas, that is still celebrated today, and that's a lot. That's like 6th century.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. This is your chance. That is definitely a Christian practice. Tell us about, the origin of St. Nicholas.
I did a monologue. He was the Bishop of Myra, and these girls were going to be sold into prostitution and slavery because they couldn't raise a dowry. And it
the
became
father, not Nicholas. The father could raise the dowry,
and Saint Nicholas made a way for them to get the money by, bringing it after collecting it, and bringing it into their home without them knowing.
Way I read the story is he wanted to deliver it anonymous, so he like walked
right.
and tossed the bag of gold through the window.
That's right.
So they wouldn't
That's
know who he was.
Right. Well, correct. But there's also many, many miracles that are – I've read scores of literature in all different cultures. St. Nicholas in the East especially is highly, highly esteemed because he had a phenomenal miraculous ministry. Tremendous miracles took place through his prayers. And so, yes, that's the beginning of that the form of Father Christmas and the gift giving and so on and so forth. But again, as you have said in our dialogue and on our conversations, things have evolved, but a lot of these practices that have evolved have been paganistic. The lights, of course, he's the light of the world, and all of this greed that's going on with Black Friday has nothing to do with Jesus, has nothing to do with Christmas. That's why
You're jumping ahead. Look. All right. You're jumping ahead real fast. Let's talk about gift giving. So, we know that the tradition of exchanging gifts in the English Christmas celebration goes back to St. Nicholas, all right? So it has Christian foundation, not Saturnalia, where they also exchange gifts, because that was probably lost over 1,000 years. So because when we look at the writings of Washington Irving and Clement Moore, we're going, they're mentioning this guy named St. Nicholas, okay? So it is clearly connected to a Christian tradition. The thing is, it's fun. That's why. Now here's the part I'm not real clear on when I did my research. Okay, so we go back. You don't like Henry VIII, okay? But he broke up the Catholic Church. I'm going to tell you right now, Catholic Mass, Christmas Mass is not my favorite Mass. That is long and it's late. As you said, Easter Mass is longer. I don't know. To me personally, Christmas Mass is painfully mm-hmm. long. Maybe because it's mm-hmm. the thing is, mm-hmm. from what I've been reading about the history of the Catholic Church, being a Christian wasn't fun. It was about suffering in this life so you could celebrate in the other life. And I think, you know, and there's these hinting that, because keep in mind the Puritans, when they left England, they didn't believe, they believed that Christmas was a pagan holiday. Why?
Well, they banned it and incorporated a fast. I mean, they were extremely austere, but as we discussed earlier, the reason why they left England, because of the worldliness and what was going on in the church, went to Holland for 12 years. So, you know, they were the Pilgrims becoming the Puritans, but they were kind of killjoys in some things.
They're the killjoys. They weren't into having fun. This is just my opinion. Okay. That once England broke away from the Catholic Church and said, you know what, let's do something different. Let's take Christmas and make it. All of a sudden, you have all this pagan revelry that's going on with winter solstice, and like it just carries over. And so all of a sudden, now keep in mind if you read Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, not everybody was celebrating it. It wasn't a national holiday. It wasn't a national holiday in America when they brought it over here. It was celebrated independently. But the point is, you have some families are turning into, feasting is a church tradition, correct?
Absolutely.
That goes back to the Jews. Okay, feasting. Feasting on, you know, how do we celebrate the saints and all these days? We feast. Is communion? But it is a feast, correct?
That's right. That's
now
correct.
We reduce it to eating of the bread and the and drinking of the wine, but it is still a feast. So that is an early Christian and Jewish tradition, is the feasting. So the feasting. Now the thing is, when you get by the time you get to Irving, Dickens, now feasting is a lot now drinking and revelry, and it is kind of like a rebellion against. Hey, we're letting loose from the Catholic Church. Now, and we exchange gifts. Hey, you know, I think what happened was they started looking at the really fun things about Christianity and just dumping it into Christmas, okay? They take this a real saint who gave money to these three daughters, and they're going like, hey, let's make a tradition out of this. Now, there may have been some pagan traditions that carried
the,
over.
The gift
that
giving goes back to the Magi, Rich, to the Magi bringing.
And it goes back to Saturnalia, too. I'm just going to say over 1,000 years, that's been lost. That meaning has been added. Just as Christians have added, hey, the Magi gave gifts, the non-Christians are saying, yeah, but how they celebrated Saturnalia was giving gifts too. But over 1,000 years,
God gave us the greatest gift. Let me tell you what I used to tell my children at Christmas.
Wait. I'm going to say that. I'm going to let you wrap that up. That's how you're going to conclude
this.
This
one thing. I used to tell my children, it's Jesus' birthday, but he let you get the gifts. As I talked about the unselfishness of God.
Got it. Okay. So the thing is, so we've got, all right, so as a historian, I look at what's the recorded record. And so we have Shakespeare, who's written about Christmas, not how it was conducted. But now we have three authors in the early 19th century that are describing Christmas. Now, we know Christmas was, well, first of all, we know Christmas was celebrated because the Puritans wouldn't celebrate it. This is the time of the colonization
of America. They had a fast. They didn't even have a feast. They had a fast. They incorporated a fast.
And by the way, wait. Now that you mention it, because I've asked you about this, it says, so this whole thing about feasting and giving gifts, that is not ordained by the church. The church only recognizes one thing, and what is that? Christ, Mass.
But he gave himself sacrificially. So giving has always been a big part of the church and the different celebrations.
Yep.
I mean, that's a big – generosity is a big part of Christianity.
Yeah, but,
so
you know, when
–
all right, when you read Washington Irving and Charles Dickens, they're not talking about Jesus' sacrifice. They're talking about St. Nicholas. Okay.
Right.
That's
mm-hmm.
my point. So what you find is that there is – because the point is, so you go from that to commercialization of Christmas. It's about buying gifts for your kids and stuff like that. So it goes back to these three authors, all right? And what Clements Moore wrote about was St. Nicholas coming in on these with these. He was influenced by the Dutch, both by Washington Irving and the Dutch, because of the reindeer.
Mm-hmm.
But this becomes popular. It's fun. You know, these are fun traditions. I don't know how I lived in Germany for 3 years, and I didn't know anyone that put up a Christmas tree. None of my German neighbors put up Christmas trees. So the Christmas tree, we know the Christmas tree origin, it goes back to Germany, but the Germans they don't set up Christmas trees. The English did, and they brought this to America. Okay. So what happens is, so if, you know, we go from these three authors and poets to America, and then it is just a popular, I'm going to say this. The Roman Catholics, their focus, especially during the Dark Ages, Middle Ages, was about suffering. When the English broke away from Catholicism, they're going like, hey, let's rebel and have fun. And Christ Mass, that officially recognizes, is a Mass on that night, which I'm telling you, I mean, look, I had my first love when I was in high school. He was Catholic and invited me to Christmas Mass. It was one of the most painful things I ever did. And from that time on, because I'm married to a Catholic
me
now.
Me and my karate master were in a liturgy with the Orthodox at a monastery for about 7 hours.
That's worse. Okay, I'll give you that one. But I'm going to tell you.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, but I think.
Right. My point is, what the English decided to do when they broke away from the Catholicism is they're going, hey, we're going to have fun with Christmas. And that comes to America. And so what we've had is, really, if you want to look at where Christmas and Halloween really take off, is post-World War II. Oh, by the way, let me point out a historical point. Remember, the Puritans didn't celebrate Christmas. This was an English holiday, but it wasn't even a holiday. It was celebrated by the English. It wasn't fully recognized. And so after the American Revolution, we broke away from Christmas. And then, you know, it's like Christmas wasn't being celebrated anymore. And when that's kind of the point of what Washington Irving, when he went over there, he visited England and he wrote about Christmas. This was on the decline. Believe it or not, the celebration of Christmas was on the decline. So he was trying to revive it. He said, here's what he saw. And then Charles Dickens writes The Christmas Carol, which becomes very popular. And all of a sudden, and then Prince Albert, who married Queen Victoria, there's a print of an 1860 Christmas where they had the Christmas tree. And it's like from that time on, there is a revival of Christmas. If you're wanting to look at the historiography of Christmas in England and America. That's the short version of it. By the time we get to the World War II and post-World War II, where we had the greatest period of prosperity, the greatest distribution of wealth, 70% that the middle class represents 70% of the wealth in America. Now parents have the money to spend on their kids, and that is when Christmas becomes commercialized.
But
so
even during prohibition, Rich, let me get a little time
hey,
here.
Hey, the rest of the show is yours. I've just brought it up to this point. The rest
even
of the show
prohibition,
is yours.
The churches were allowed to use wine. They never stopped celebrating. You were giving us a pagan's perspective on the Christ Mass. You know, when we started the show, I suggested that we talk about the over-commercializing of Christmas and the crowding out of its true meaning. And then we started talking about these other pagan practices that correlated with Christmas. And I shared with you that great scholars that I have read and respected have substantiated that the birth of Jesus was recorded because it was a great world event on December 25th. Now, I don't want to stay on that too long, okay? But like I said, we have other births that are recorded that we have been celebrating for years. And one is the mother of Jesus. We've talked about, and that's September 8th. And one of our dear parishioners, Sandy's birthday is on the same day. Many, many people, and as you pointed out, you know, Alexander the Great was a great person. Of course, we're going to know his dates. But we know a lot of dates and a lot of different feasts that have been celebrated for centuries in the church. And so I think it's really, really important that we know that there's been documentation. And again, liturgy is like when the way we pray is the way we worship or the way we believe. And so therefore, we have put these things down in liturgy, and these liturgies have been prayed for centuries, for the whole time of the church, the earliest times of the church. You can look at the liturgy, Justin Martyr, for instance, you know, in the year 155, you can see exactly what we practice today. So, you know, we've discussed a lot of different things. And like I said, the church has been sinful, and the church may have, you know, been accused of syncretism and involving itself in pagan things when they tried to convert cultures, but she's never been stupid. Like I said, she started universities in the world. She has a philosophical tradition. And so therefore she just can't be accused of superstition and just not understanding what she believed. Now, there are people that, you know, kind of practice where people, even with the Virgin Mary, it's not the official teaching of the church, but they practice these things and everybody thinks that's what the church believes. And I'm telling you from the documentation and from the councils of the church and from great historians, including Luke, who's an elegant writer, a physician, as you mentioned, very intelligent, a great historian who interviewed, along with St. John, the Virgin Mary, would have had these dates circulating in the church. And so I think that there are a number of things that, you know, we want to look at as far as the pagan way of calling it, same with Halloween. Hallowed Eve. It's the eve before All Saints Day. All that demonic stuff that has been brought in was not something sanctioned by the church, was not an official celebration. It was preparation for All Saints Day. And so I just think, I'm not saying the church has been pure, but she has a rhythm. She has a certain liturgical calendar that she lives year after year after year and celebrates all of these feasts and things of that nature. And like I said before, the church has been sinful, but not stupid. And, you know, there are great documentations of stuff. And the fact is that we still celebrate the Nativity. We still celebrate these things after all of these years when all these other pagan practices have fallen by the wayside, And even in Rome, and all the paganism that took place there in Rome. So, you know, I'd like to answer, you know, any other questions. I don't think that the most important thing is the date, although good scholars and good historians have agreed upon the date. And like I said, when you have something as traumatic as God sending his son and all the turmoil that took place, even with Herod killing all the innocent children looking for Christ, you know, we'll never forget December 7th. We'll never forget 9/11 because of those things that happened near or in our lifetime. And I think that, you know, this is something that the church has had ingrained in its conscience and in its mind. So I don't know if there's anything else that we want to address or any particular thing, but I just want us to understand that Advent starts on Sunday.
Well, look, you and I are arguing over a date, and the thing is, the discussion was about putting Christ back into Christmas.
Right.
And what I was hoping to describe is the historicity of how Christ has slowly been removed from his birthday.
Right. And we established the
date is not important.
Right.
And
right.
And
no, but I mean,
you and I arguing over the date is the same thing as the Roman Catholic Church and the Greek Orthodox churches arguing over when did Jesus become God?
No, not when
you know, we're arguing
God,
over a time frame, and we're so here's your chance to now describe to everybody else that Jesus, that the celebration of Christmas is about the birth of the Son of God.
Right. And what's disturbing, Rich, and yes, you're right about the dates between the Orthodox and the Catholics over Easter and the rules that they were to follow from the beginning. There's a lot of history involved there when Jesus rose from the dead. They always believed that he was born. Thirds, I think, those of us who feel like our holiday has been hijacked. When we see the greed, when we see the Black Fridays and people fighting over things, we see the end of the year spending, we see the indulgence, we realize that, you know, St. Francis is the one who brought, you know, the manger into the church, the live manger. We've gotten away from the simplicity. Yeah, lights are beautiful. Jesus was the light of the world. He hung on a tree, and there are other ornaments that are on the tree that can speak of the fruits and the gifts of the Spirit. We used to put berries and popcorn and all these other things. But we're really grieved over what people call Christmas, this Christ Mass, where God sent his son to die for our sins. And yes, it's a great time of celebration. That's why those shepherds ran to what was told them by the angels, glory to God in the highest, goodwill to men. And that's why the kings, the magi, you know, followed after the star to bring gifts and to bow to the king, because the kingdom of God would be established on earth, but not an earthly kingdom, but a spiritual kingdom. We just celebrated Christ the King. But what has happened is people have begun to think that it's their birthday, and they want, what do you want for Christmas? What do you want for Christmas? Rather than, as Jesus taught, it's more blessed to give than to receive. God gave his most precious son, and people are so greedy, and they're going to buy cars, and they're going to buy all these things because the end of the year spending and for the taxes. It has nothing to do with Christ. It's not any sacrificial at all. And it really becomes disturbing, true believers, that the world has hijacked our Christians. So they really, in my opinion, they can say happy holidays, because they're not celebrating Christmas. And like you mentioned,
all right. Let me interrupt, okay? Because you're nailing it.
Let me. Okay, go ahead. Finish. I just want to say.
Keep
what
in mind
you mentioned about
that. That I would say that at least half our listening audience doesn't even believe in God. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of us who believe in God and believe Jesus is the Son of God, you're just reminding us that, hey, we got to refocus.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm challenging you right now in the time remaining to convince, you know, the rest of the people who think they are in control of their lives, that there is no God. Or if there is a God, he doesn't have any influence over the outcome of their life. See, I'm challenging you right now to talk to those people.
Christmas Eve in 1971, I had a group of people in my division that was off the coast of Vietnam, and they were telling me about Christ. And I had known about Christ as a historical figure. I had been an altar boy, but I had no reality of who Christ was. And I was given a Gideon Bible with a little prayer in the back of it to really put God to the test and really acknowledge Christ at Christmas to be born in my heart and to change my life. That was in 1971, 50 years ago. And I was a high school dropout. I went into the military because I had nothing else to do and I had to get away from home because I was in lots of trouble. And Christ has so changed my life, the reality of who Jesus Christ is, from reading his word, from praying, from having experiences, real experiences with him, from meeting a wonderful woman who's been my wife for 45 years. And so it truly transformed my life. So this wasn't just something that was a nice tradition to believe in. We had done that in our family, but it was an encounter with Jesus Christ. So now I celebrate the rebirth of my life because Jesus came in, filled me with his spirit, made me a new man, put a call on my life, did great things for me educationally, gave me a purpose in life. I was on a downward spiral, and all it was acknowledgement that Jesus Christ is Lord and that he's alive and that he was born on Christmas. But on that Christmas Eve, I went on the highest place that I could travel, the mast of the ship, and asked him to come into my life and to be born in my life, and if he was real. And he proved himself, and I challenge each of the listeners who don't believe he's real. I've had people tell me...
Wait, okay, hold on. You're skipping, you're fast-forwarding.
Let me finish the
story. How did he prove? Look, you and I have had personal experience with God.
Absolutely.
So I want you to
tell the audience.
Story.
Guy was in prison, said, God, if you're real, wake me up at 2:15 in the morning. I have had answered prayer. I have had impressions by God, not audible voices, where even things that I've seen in my mind's eye that have been miraculous guidance in my life, that no way I could have known these things in the natural. And I'm challenging people, if you ask Christ to your life, he will be born in you and give you a new life, new strength that you never had to do things you never thought possible. And I can get as specific as possible with that, but that very challenge in itself, he's alive. He came to earth. He still lives. He rose from the dead. He's hearing us
right now. I want to interject on this because this is where we're in agreement, all right, because when you hear pastors, preachers, whatever, talking about a personal relationship of God, I don't even think they understand what that means, okay? Father Michael started out as a Catholic who grew up in that tradition, became a Pentecostal. The Pentecostals, I believe, the charismatic, who really believe in – see, most religions believe that all those gifts and God, you know, talking to his followers – ended with the first century Christian church. I know that because I was raised a Baptist. Okay. Then he became, because of his combination of the old church with the Catholic Church and his Pentecostal background, he became a charismatic Episcopalian, and he combines to man now. All right. If you have any doubt, Pacelli, here is Father Michael. Here's your chance to tell people how to contact you to find out. Mm-hmm. How God speaks to you. Because I'm going to tell you right now, all right, in the short time we have left, that I went to a reunion of my old rifle company, and I was talking to the wife of one of my soldiers, and she told me about that she had premonitions of the death of close friends, and she considered it a curse. And I told her, says, and whenever she was Lutheran, and when she talked to her pastor about that, he said it comes from the devil. It's like, no. The thing is, most preachers do not understand how God speaks to us today. Father Michael is my spiritual mentor. He coaches me on this. So for anyone who has these questions, how do they reach out and talk and connect with you, Father Michael?
Okay, thank you, Rich, for that. You can make me a friend on Facebook or request a friendship from me, Michael Pacello III, MichaelPacella, the Roman numeral 111, so the third. Also, I have a Gmail account, St. Michael's Church, Saint is spelled out, at gmail.com. St. Michael's Church, 14, the number 14, at gmail.com. And you can reach me that way. Saint is spelled out, S-A-I-N-T, Michael's, with no apostrophe, Church, the number 14, at Gmail. And I will be glad to answer any questions, and we can even maybe have a phone conversation. But please become my friend on Facebook, and we can talk about the reality of God's Holy Spirit and the way he speaks to us today and makes these realities our own possession, not just something that was a historical factor that you knew about.
Look, I am a witness to his own life, his own calling. That's a different story. But I will tell you, my own personal witness is I felt the calling that I had to go to Iraq. I'm in my 50s, and I'm a civilian historian, and I felt the calling. And what Father Michael taught me was that if you have any doubt, you'll receive confirmation. I received three confirmations, and I went to Iraq. Five times I rode on convoys, and I understood, and based on his mentoring, I could ride on convoys. 2007 was the worst year of the, I rode on six convoys, three of them were hit by IEDs. But I knew that if something was going to happen to me, I'd be warned because I opened my heart. And the thing is, in what Father Michael has done is, first of all, I'm a believer, okay? There's an episode where I talked about the fact that my mother was a fortune teller. So I know about the metaphysical world. And what Father Michael has taught me is about how God speaks to us. And so if I'm telling you, I rode on 17 convoys, three hit by IEDs. And, I learned to trust and obey, okay? So if any of you have any questions, reach out and contact Father Michael.
Thank you. I would also say during this Christmas season, because God also speaks through his word, there are two infancy narratives, one recorded by St. Matthew. He first wrote it in Aramaic because his audience was Hebraic. And then in Greek, and then St. Luke, who was a companion of St. Paul, but he was commanded by St. Peter to write Luke and commanded by St. Paul to write Acts. And there's beautiful historical, you know, Luke as a historian has been challenged by secular historians for centuries. And they would do some excavation, and St. Luke would always be exonerated. So I would encourage you to look at those two Christmas stories in the New Testament.
All right, guys. Well, it sounds like we're down to our last 5 minutes, and I want to thank both of you for a very spirited discussion. Ultimately, I think what we've all got out of this is that there's definitely a need to put Christ back in Christmas. You know, as a kid growing up, you know, Christmas was a totally different thing. Gifts were not, definitely not as plentiful as they are now. And it was more about getting the families together and bringing each other into a position to where we would celebrate and openly discuss, you know, why do we have Christmas? And it was about the birth of Jesus Christ. And when people are arguing and coming back, and when you see things like a Black Friday sale where people are killed, murdered, you know, trampled by these people that are trying to get a gift or a toy, and it's turned into this just almost like an insane race, then we've definitely lost sight of Christmas. And I think the commercialization of Christmas would be an accurate statement that has all but destroyed it. And quite frankly, I put the blame on these things for that's the reason why, as Rich said, you know, we have so many people that are sitting in the audience right now who don't even believe in God, who, you know, their thing for Christmas is exactly what you're saying, was to spend money, to gorge themselves, you know, the gluttony, the greed, you know, all of these things that we know are bad has created an opportunity for the devil himself to walk in and to steal the true meaning of Christmas. And it's not really that he stole it. It's that so many people have given it to him. Mm-hmm. And this evening really was all about trying to really establish the peace on earth and goodwill to all men, that truly what the birth of Christ stands for. So I want to thank you both. And you both demonstrated that, you know, I mean, it was good to hear the spirited and lively debate. But America, the world, could surely use a dose of tonight's discussion. Because we are the world is a violent, violent place. And it almost reminds you of the teachings and the discussions and the readings before the Great Flood, how the world had become this violent and wicked place that God destroyed with the flood. So I pray and hope that we can all come together as a people, and we can, you know, we can return to a level of at least civility. I think civility would be a good thing to shoot for. And hopefully we will elect decent and godly people to be in the office again that aren't afraid to pray openly and have a level of civility and don't walk around and do silly things. We have plenty of silly going on right now. Like I said in the beginning of the show, we've got a lot of pigs out there that act in ways that are contrary to good civility and decency. So with this last minute, Father Michael, take us out in prayer and we'll say goodnight.
Okay. Lord God, we thank you that the first Christmas was simple. It was in a manger cave. Lord, help us to have that simplicity restored to our hearts as we celebrate this Christmas. I ask and pray these things and a blessing on our audience and host. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. God bless you all and have a wonderful evening. Good night, everyone.
Good night.